This week on the Finding Impact podcast, we're talking about how a last mile distributor pivoted from a community entrepreneur model to a key distributor model and why they did it, with Philip Wilson of Ecofiltro.
FindingImpact.com. FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.
Hey everyone, my name is Andy Narricot. I'm the founder of Finding Impact, the show for social entrepreneurs working in emerging markets, pioneering, paving the way, blazing a trail, such as the guest on today's show. We're talking about water filters. Today, we're kicking off a three-part series in partnership with the Global Distributors Collective, and it's all about last-mile distribution. So for those of you who don't know, the Global Distributive Collective is a collective of over 140 last-mile distribution companies around the world, and GDC supports distributors to help them reach underserved customers with life-changing products. You know, the ones like solar lights, clean cook stoves, water filters, sanitation, nutrition products, etc. GDC is another great example, I think, of systems alliance, you know, that we've talked about before, where organizations come together to tackle systemic challenges. So you'll see that GDC has a couple of main activities. One, it's to provide services to help distributors save time and money, you know, and adopt best practices, facilitate new partnerships, that sort of thing. And the second thing is to work to build a collective voice and raise the profile of last mile distributors, working with key stakeholders to support a better sector. So this is a really great example of a systems alliance that every sector needs. The GDC is hosted by our friends at Practical Action, with implementing partners Hystra and the BOP Innovation Center. So I encourage you to go and check out more. globaldistributorscollective.org is their website. So check it out. This series aims to provide some unique insights into some of the challenges and pivots that these organizations have. Each episode will feature one company in the GDC who face a particular challenge and how they've overcome it. Incredible stories we're going to share with you, some incredible insights. Just unbelievable. I'm really excited about this one. And also, we'll be giving you some insight and analysis at the end of each episode from a member of the GDC team. So make sure you stick around for that at the end. And the first episode is with Philip Wilson of Ecofiltro in Guatemala. The challenge they face was not getting sufficient sales through their community entrepreneur model. And they talk about the pivot towards key distributors, which is having incredible success. Philip will share with you. And we talk about the mistakes they made in working with community entrepreneurs, some of the things they tried to lift the sales from these community entrepreneurs. They talked about how they researched and came up with their new model and all about the piloting of that new model whilst or alongside ongoing operations. And they also talk about how they selected the successful distributors and how they effectively turned their push product into a pull product. And really, really great story. So much to share. Make sure you check out the show notes at findingimpact.com. And that's it. We'll just get straight into it now. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Philip Wilson of Ecofiltro. Hi, everyone. I've got Philip Wilson here. And we're going to do an interview about a pivot they recently made in their social enterprise and all about that. And we're going to focus on why they decided to do the pivot, what it was like before, some of the preliminary results they're getting, because I know that this is something that everyone faces, and it's really instructive for Philip to come on and share all about that. So Philip is the founder of Ecofiltro, who sell water filters based out of Guatemala. He spent a considerable time in his early career, in the corporate world, but decided to put his experience to a life of purpose, social enterprise, like so many people listening. Great, I'm excited to dig into it. But before we get into all the details, welcome Philip onto the show.
Hi everyone. Great to be here, Andy, and to be talking to everyone at Finding Impact.
Fantastic. Well, Philip, what I wanted to do is just quickly sort of give us the context. So like tell everyone, about the company, what you're selling, a few main statistics, so then we can really just focus on that that point of what you noticed in your social enterprise that you wanted to change. You realized that you had to make that step and change things around.
Yeah, sure. So Ecofiltro was born out of our family's foundation. And, you know, we were focused on water because, you know, 80% of illness is water related in countries like Guatemala. And we were donor dependent. We were donating about 2,000 filters a year in rural Guatemala. And, you know, we were in a country where there's a million families without clean water. So we were kind of in a very minimal way creating impact in rural areas of the country. And so I got involved in 2010. And I asked the board of the foundation if I could, you know, focus on a market-based solution to delivering water filters in rural areas as opposed to, you know, donating filters and seeing the poor as objects of pity as opposed to potential customers. So from 2010 to today, we've sold over 520,000 filters, of which about 40%, roughly 300,000, have been sold to rural families. And the balance, you know, about 40% or about 200,000 have been sold to urban families. You know, we developed a, kind of a hybrid model where urban subsidized rural. And, you know, I've been really focused on every day trying to penetrate the base of the pyramid in rural areas as much as possible. That's been the real focus. And the goal is a million families in rural Guatemala with clean water through Ecofiltro by the year 2020.
Amazing. So you've got this situation where you had thinking you had minimal impact. And you wanted to scale this massively through the market and then it's incredible numbers. Tell us a little bit then about, you know, the size you're at, how you were distributing these filters out to your markets. You had this community entrepreneur model, right?
Yeah, correct. Well, actually, right before the community entrepreneur, we sold to several large NGOs. I was thinking, wow, you know, I'm going to focus on building a really low cost filter and then use the NGOs as the model. Well, we sold for, you know, a year or so, large amounts of filters to NGOs. But their model was just giving them away for free. And there wasn't really a lot of follow-up or sustainability. And so then I said, okay, we're not going to solve the problem by dumping the filters on the rural poor, which is what was happening with the NGOs. So I decided to focus on below-the-line marketing in rural areas, which means getting to know the community, getting to know who the leaders were, and then trying to find community entrepreneurs where we would, you know, engage them, we would interview them, and we would, you know, usually interview three community entrepreneurs per area, and we would choose one, basically based on their community skills and being honorable, well-liked people in the community. We would usually get that information from the school director or from the COCODE, which is the unofficial mayor of the area. And basically, we would give them five filters on consignment, and they would go door to door and promote the filter. And as they would sell the filter, they would receive a 10% commission after the funds were deposited in the Ecofiltro bank account. So we did that for several years and ended up having hundreds of community entrepreneurs all over Guatemala, but we weren't getting the penetration that we were expecting. And there was a lot of variability in terms of success in selling the filters from one community to the next. And it was all based on the commitment and the talent and abilities of the community entrepreneur.
So you weren't getting the penetration and you weren't, you know, so did you set out with some of these big expectations of numbers to hit and you realized that you just weren't going to meet them? How did you arrive at those original numbers? And then how were you figuring that it just wasn't working?
Well, we made several mistakes. Like one of the mistakes we made is we were offering at the very beginning up to 24 payments, you know, because we guarantee the filter for, you know, for 2 years. And so we had these really, really liberal payment plans. And we found that it was becoming more expensive to collect the money. And, you know, that was making that financing plan, which was done internally by us, not sustainable at all. So then we pivoted and said, okay, we shouldn't be giving 24 payments. And the families in these areas were saying, hey, we like the product, but we feel like we're in debt with you all our lives. Can we have two or three payments only? So it's kind of funny. You know, I was thinking that with providing lots of payments, we were going to have more demand. And what was actually happening was people wanted to pay it off quicker, which is something we didn't expect. Mm. But, you know, out of the five that we would give on consignment, we were having on average each month, these community entrepreneurs were only selling like 3.3 filters per month. And at that rate, we were not going to reach the ultimate, you know, the big, hairy, audacious goal of 1 million families by the year 2020. I mean, it was too expensive, you know, to get the filters to these people. The community entrepreneurs really didn't have any skin in the game because they were receiving all the training and the filters at no cost to them. And so because there wasn't any skin to the game, it was a very small minority of the community entrepreneurs that were really out there pushing the filters and promoting them and trying to get the filters sold to their neighbors.
Yeah, when you say, you know, so you're saying it was too expensive. So you'd obviously, there's a period of time where you were doing this model and you were getting the feedback and measuring the numbers and realized that the economics just weren't working out. What was that time when you were running that? How long were you running that first iteration for?
Well, it's kind of embarrassing, but it's something that we realized after about a year, and it took us a full other year to say, hey, this is just not the right design, and we need to dramatically rethink the process. So it really took us 2 years to no longer concentrate on the community entrepreneur, but find a more formal and financially sustainable method to pivot.
Okay. So you found out that these economics weren't stacking up and you weren't getting the volumes. So these what were you trying to do? There's obviously wholesale change, which you've done, and we're going to get into that. But what were some of the small iterative tweaks you tried to make with those community entrepreneurs to try and increase from that 3.3 up to more?
Yeah. Well, one of the things we did is we started even busing, you know, large amounts of community entrepreneurs to the factory and to put them through more extensive training and, you know, show them the factory, which is, you know, quite large and well run and clean. And just kind of say, look, you have this wonderful product with this well-run factory backing it up, and you know, trying to impart sales skills and more training so that they would have more confidence to promote the filter in their communities. So we did a lot of those things. We even started doing some incentive programs where, you know, people, if they you know, let's say, for instance, I think the first program was, you know, if they reach 10 filters or more per month, we would give them certain prizes to incentivize them to, you know, try to increase their average sales number. And also we started talking about, you know, doing referral programs. You know, if someone from their community brought, you know, five other neighbors to buy a filter, that they would get the filter at no cost. So we really started to basically copy what a lot of big companies like Avon, you know, which is a big cosmetics company that has about 70,000 salespeople in Guatemala. We saw that they were doing that in rural areas, and we were basically trying to replicate what they were doing in terms of incentives.
But you weren't getting the uplift in sales very much? Was it any increase or nothing was working? Or
I mean, it was an increase of maybe 3.2 to 4.6 in average sales, but it wasn't substantial. And, you know, these people were doing this kind of as a, you know, an added income, something that would generate, you know, some extra spending money for them, but their livelihoods didn't depend on us. And so it was just poorly designed, I think, right from the beginning, from the consignment of the filters to making this a way for them to bring added income into their household. And, you know, we had the same expense of getting these filters to all these rural areas in the middle of nowhere, yet we weren't having a dramatic increase in the sales to their neighbors.
Mm. Well, I mean, Philip, just going to casting your mind back to that time, you know, personally, did you have any, you know, self-doubt, you know, my model is not working, or did you, you know, how did you get to that point where you said, right, we've got to do something about this? It's, we've got to make a big change.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that I think we were doing well, even back then, is we try to measure everything. You know, we measure the profitability of our urban sales. We were measuring all the money we were spending on rural activities. And so we knew that we were losing a lot of money in rural areas. And we knew what each region was losing for us each month. So by seeing these numbers coming in every month and all the red ink, we're like, okay, this is never going to work if we continue. And I think we were doing that really well right from the beginning, was really identifying, you know, the profitability per product and per geographical area in Guatemala. And all the rural area was losing money, and it just wasn't sustainable. But I really feel like we were doing a good job of measuring, so we could catch it, you know, before we brought down the whole ship financially.
Yeah. So some pretty tough decision you realize it had to be made. Now, take us to that point. What was the idea that you came up with? And, you know, where did you get your inspiration from? Did you, again, copy it from Avon or other companies? Or is this just, you know, out of the blue?
Yeah, so the old community entrepreneur model, I was reading up on a lot of the things that were happening in Africa and Asia with social enterprises. And, you know, a lot of them had these community entrepreneurship strategies. And I thought that they were working better than they actually were. When I actually dug into the outcomes and the financial impact, and when I actually talked to social entrepreneurs, they weren't really experiencing any better results than what I was experiencing, which was basically they weren't working. And so, you know, I pivoted. And I said, okay, we didn't do it from one day to the next. Over the next 18 months, we said, okay, one of the big fundamental problems of the community entrepreneurship strategy is they have no skin in the game, okay? So these community entrepreneurs basically receive everything for free from us. They get the five filters at consignment, and we don't charge them for the marketing material. We basically hand everything to them, which is what we were doing before, when we were giving the filters for free as a foundation. And, you know, the filter was not, being appreciated because there was no cost to the end consumer. So we were doing the same thing, except now we were doing it for the community entrepreneur. We were giving everything for free. So we said, okay, first of all, one of the big things that we have to change is we're going to find local distributors and we're going to make them invest in 20 filters as an initial inventory. And that's going to filter out the people that really aren't interested in taking financial risk and going out and trying to promote the filters in their communities. So the first real big difference that we made was, you know, we want to find local distributors that, one, are already legally established businesses. They have the financial wherewithal to buy and inventory the filters. And then they have a physical presence some sort of a store that's been around for at least 2 years, where they have been selling other products that won't compete with the Ecofiltro. So that eliminated like the little convenience stores where they sell bottled water. But we went with those stores that were selling non-competing products and where they would feel like they would have a market to sell because they would have a value proposition in promoting the water filter to their neighbors. But the big difference is that they would have, you know, an investment made in Ecofiltro through the inventory so that they would, you know, want to move that product and convert it into cash and at a profit.
So you, you wanted them to purchase 20. Why 20? How did you get to the number 20?
Well, we found that, you know, in order to start a little convenience store in a community, the average investment is about 20,000 quetzales, which is about, it's about $3,000. Okay. So we said, okay, there are these little convenience stores all over rural Guatemala. There's thousands and thousands of them. So we know that there are people that have at least $3,000, you know, to invest in a little business. We were asking them, you know, to invest in 20 filters, you're only talking about $500, much less than what we knew people had in terms of money to invest in a little convenience store. So we said, okay, you know, we think that there's $500 out there with these local distributors. And we started a pilot. So we said, okay, let's try to find 35 local distributors in the different regions of Guatemala, highlands, coastal, et cetera. And we did. We found 35 local distributors that had the financial resources to invest $500 in, you know, in 20 filters. And but it all started with us doing some research and understanding that there were all these local entrepreneurs putting up to $3,000 in these convenience stores to start them up.
Mm. So let's break that down. So you did a bit of research initially. So you went and spoke to all of these, you know, to little shops to understand what were their economics and what are their motivations and what their size is. And then you did a pilot. Can you just describe that in a bit more detail?
Yeah. So it started out with research, and I have 12 field representatives that are all over Guatemala. And, you know, we all came to the conclusion that the community entrepreneurship model was not working. And so we said, okay, let's find out what kind of money the local entrepreneurs have. And let's start with the little convenience stores, you know, because that's the typical entrepreneurship pathway is to start a little convenience store. And in the whole country, we found that, you know, it was very close to $3,000. That's the number that a lot of our field representatives were telling us. That's what these people were investing in initial inventory to get little stores going. And, you know, it's not only initial inventory, but there are other startup costs. In some cases, you know, refrigerators and connection costs, so they have the right type of electricity to run a little store. But it ended up being $3,000 in startup costs. And so that was kind of like, okay, so let's send out feelers and see, you know, how many would be interested in investing, you know, up to $500 in Ecofiltros. And we found that because we had a lot of PR from previous years of Ecofiltro and our objectives was to solve the water problem in Guatemala, people had heard of us, and we had already been well known in urban areas because we were in most of the big malls and the Walmarts and all the big retailers. About 70% of the people we approached had heard of Ecofiltro. So the barrier of explaining what we were all about was lowered because we were well known in urban areas. That had seeped into some of the rural conscientiousness. So market research, and then, you know, we test each of our 12 field representatives to find three local distributors that we could test out. And that's how we came up with the 35 local distributors that we tested out 18 months ago, and with great results, because those, on average, each local distributor, because they had a financial stake in moving the product, because they had turned over the money to us, they were averaging more than 20 filters per month in sales. So it took about 45 to 60 days to get them going. But if you analyzed what they did over a 6 month period, they had averaged over 20. I mean, there were a few that were at 12 to 15, but there were some that are at 25 to 30. And we said, wow, this is something that's financially sustainable, because we receive the money right away before we deliver the filters. And, you know, we also found that they would take the financial risk, because even though most of the sales would be upfront to their neighbors in the communities, we found that some were providing payments to some of their customers. And they were doing it in a lot smarter way, because, you know, they were risking their capital, providing the financing. But they knew their neighbors better than we did, and they had the financial risk. And so they were making much better choices at who they would give two or three payments to than when we were doing it ourselves with a community entrepreneur that really didn't have anything to lose, whether it was done correctly or incorrectly. The actual financial risk was on us always.
Mm. So that's really instructive that you had this really strong brand. I just want to mention that, because you're not starting from scratch. You've already have this kind of aspiration or brand that is linked to urban areas and, you know, higher standard of living that a lot of people were happy to sell. And that you're riding off a lot of that. So that was really important. It gave you a jump start. Then you found these as the pilot. You got your field reps to go out and say, find these three local distributors who weren't starting from scratch. These local distributors obviously knew the brand already. But can you just talk a little bit more about, because that's quite a sales challenge for your 12 reps to say, invest into these. What did you give them to help the distributors do their job? You know, because you want them to go out and sell it rather than just be reactive, right?
Yeah. That's actually a great, great question, because, so, you know, one of the things that we gave the 12 field reps is, okay, we gave them the profile. Okay, they had to have an existing business, had to be legal, good reputation. They had to have a local presence. They had to have transportation, because we didn't want them to just depend on the people coming to their stores in areas that had a lot of heavy traffic. They also had to have vehicles so that they could also create pull demand. But, you know, it's important to note that we established a very popular school program in 2014. In 2014, we decided to replicate what, you know, companies like Microsoft do all over the world in giving, you know, in the case of Microsoft, free software and free computers to schools. We started providing one filter per classroom and one in the kitchen in rural areas. And so we became a known entity in a lot of communities because of this great kind of altruistic donation of filters to schools to provide all these children with clean water in the classroom. And that was something that was really important in creating that brand awareness. So it wasn't just, you know, what people were seeing in papers, because we did have a lot of PR and we were always mentioned in the media. But we also, you know, we had donated by the end of 2018, we had already donated over 25,000 filters to over 4,000 schools. So there was 850,000 children that were drinking out of an Ecofiltro in a school. And, you know, those were being financed by our urban sales, a lot of those donated filters. And a lot of our corporate partners were donating filters to schools. So these distributors were like, oh, I've seen your filters in urban areas. I've seen you in the paper. Wow, I've seen them in schools. And, you know, a year ago when we started piloting, we started making the local distributor the hero. So we would channel that donation through the distributor so that the person that was actually donating the filters to the school was a local distributor, not Ecofiltro. So they were getting a lot of, you know, positive vibes by making that donation to the local school. And they were like, oh, wow, this is a great distributor that's not only, you know, representing Ecofiltro in the community, but they're actually doing something great for the community and providing clean water to the children. And so it was a very holistic approach. But I did want to mention the school program because the school program was key in providing that branding that we wouldn't have had we not been in the schools early on.
Yeah, so that's sort of adds to that cachet of an aspirational brand, but you've also got this altruistic brand that people really highly recommend because you're doing this great work in the community. So does that mean you have to continue with a sort of nonprofit arm or a foundation that to fundraise and to can you to channeling that in, which is basically your marketing? Good marketing.
Yeah. It's basically a marketing expense. So I don't really see it as kind of a lost, you know, money being donated. I see it as, okay, that's an investment that we have to make in the communities, one, to give it credibility, and two, to give it, you know, to give these consumers one more reason to buy from the local distributor. Because, you know, we're a brand that's really trying to provide health in the community, not only be financially sustainable. And, you know, if a local distributor is selling 20 or more, if they're purchasing 20 or more from us each month, you know, let's say we donate 20 filters a year to 20 classrooms in their market, the money we make from the purchases of the local distributor will cover those donations.
So that's a marketing expense. That's brilliant. So what happened to those community entrepreneurs? Was there a little bit of a few dejected people, or did you sort of keep them as part of the model?
I mean, so the majority of the community entrepreneurs, they were not really making lots of money, you know, because they were selling on average three. So it wasn't like we were taking a vital source of income from them. Mm. And, you know, we ended up, you know, they ended up, we would provide a filter as part of the package for their own home where they could do demos. So they ended up getting, you know, a filter at no cost, which they use and benefit from financially because they don't have to buy firewood to boil water anymore. So, you know, we didn't have any people being upset. I think we all recognized that, you know, it wasn't good for them financially, and it was not going to help us reach our million family goal by the year 2020, and it was financially unsustainable.
Hmm. But there must have been a transition period, right, off this pilot that you then rolled it out to the whole organization, or is that still in process?
Yeah, so we didn't like – so what we did basically, you know, a year and a half ago, when we said, okay, we need to design something that's financially sustainable, and we came across this local distributor approach, which, you know, in 2018 was a success. Basically, we said, okay, let's just channel these community entrepreneurs. If they have customers and most of them no longer had any inventory, we're going to channel them to the local distributor, and they're going to purchase for them. And they were all pretty happy to do that and to have someone that was really going to do a better job than they were doing for their existing customers that they'd sold to. I mean, it was almost like a relief because we were trying to pressure them to sell more filters, and they weren't the right profile of people to pressure to sell more. So what we did basically, the next step was we divided the country into 270 regions of 7,500 rural families. And we tasked all our 12 field reps. We said, okay, we want each of you to have 20 local distributors of which today, you know, we actually had our meeting this morning. Right now we have 99 local distributors, and they have a deadline of by June 1st of 2019, we are to have 270 local distributors, which means on average, they're going to have about 20 to 25. We still have one region that we're going to add. And then we're going to have, and this is really, really, really important. We almost created like this franchise package. And we did it very, very professionally with professional designers so that all 270 local distributors are communicating the same thing to the same rural family and consumer. And, you know, everything from, you know, how you make an approach if they come into the store, or how you describe the product if it's someone that you're going door to door to, but they're all saying the same thing. And we weren't really doing that on a real formal and a real graphical, real professional way with the community entrepreneurs. So now, you know, like they do with franchising or like the Avon salespeople, they have these packages and they say the exact same thing to the customers so that we can really measure all 270 after they all have the same kind of marketing tools to sell to these end consumers.
So you have the same kind of marketing materials and you can measure what? Sorry.
Well, we really measure their results in sales each month because they're all going to be approaching the rural end consumer in the same way. They're going to be, you know, they're going to have frequently asked questions, and they're going to be responding to the frequently asked questions identically. And, you know, we have taken, you know, what the top, you know, the 35 local distributors, the ones, you know, the five or six that were just hitting the ball out of the park and selling 30 or more filters a month. Okay, what are they doing? And we were incorporating some of the things that they were doing into this marketing package so that we could promote best practices. And it's really not something you do only once. But, you know, we told the whole team of 12 field reps that every 3 months we're going to be updating best practices of all this network of local distributors so that, you know, people that were really being successful, well, what were they doing? And try to disseminate that information as quickly as possible to all the local distributors. Because at the end of the day, you know, all the solutions or all the strategies or all the answers don't necessarily come from the factory. Many times they come from local distributors that are innovating and doing creative things to increase their local sales. And because they have a financial stake, you know, they own the inventory, they're always finding ways to sell more filters each month.
That's brilliant. So you went from, just getting these numbers, went from about 35 with 12 distributors in the pilot. You scaled it up to 99. So that's about 8 to 9 right. per distributors per field rep. And now you're challenging them right. 270. Wow.
Yeah. By June 1st. Yeah.
Amazing.
And you know, we have 177,000, I think, Facebook followers. And many of them, believe it or not, are in rural areas. And so we're constantly posting, you know, we're looking for local distributors. And so all the people, like at today's meeting, I believe Miner, who's our, you know, rural sales director, I think he got something like 48 interested people from the post over the weekend. And so those 48 are probably going to turn into, you know, 15 to 25 likely local distributors just from social media, apart from the work that they're doing in their rural areas. So we're really trying to let everyone know that we're aggressively looking for partners in rural areas, and it requires social media, and it requires a lot of our field reps to be recruiting these local distributors. So instead of them recruiting community entrepreneurs, they're recruiting local distributors on a daily basis.
Fantastic. There's about five layers deep on every answer that you've given that we could go into, but unfortunately we're running out of time. So I want to direct, well, maybe you can do this. Philip, where should we direct everyone if they want to find out more about Ecofiltro?
Yeah, sure. If anyone, I'm available at any time to answer any questions if they're social entrepreneurs. pwilson@ecofiltro.com. Contact me directly, and I'd be happy to provide any details because there are a lot of things that we do that we can't cover for a broad audience. But we have failed so often in rural areas that we have a lot of experience on what went well and what was a learning experience. But it all starts with, really pivoting right from the beginning from problem to be solved to market to be served. That's the kind of macro mindset. And then you really focus on the most financially sustainable way to sell to the base of the pyramid. And what we have found is it has to be through the local distributor having a financial investment in the filters so that they have an incentive to promote them.
And quickly, what was the margin that the distributors are making?
Yeah, so they're making a 20% margin on the filter. And, we are doing promotions on some months. If we didn't hit our target one month, we'll provide an incentive and maybe an extra margin to do a promotion so that they move more product.
Amazing. And I just wanted to, back up what Philip says, or it backs up on your website, Philip, that it says, written about us, we will always remain open to sharing our production process and our marketing activities with any outside group that wants to solve the water challenge in their home country. Bravo, yeah. My friend. That's amazing. Philip, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Andy, for inviting me. And I think what you're doing is incredibly important to share best practices around the world. And social entrepreneurs are going to solve these problems quickly. We just need to give them access to information from entrepreneurs that have found things to work.
And that was Philip Wilson of Ecofiltro. Thanks, Philip, for coming on the show. I hope you all enjoyed that. And now we've got Emma Collenbrander here from the Global Distributors Collective to give us a little context on this and what it means for the wider last mile distributor market. So, hi, Emma. Welcome onto the show.
Thanks, Andy.
So what do we learn about Ecofiltro that is helpful for the wider social enterprise community, do you think?
Well, we chose to profile Ecofiltro because we think that this case highlights one of the key strengths of last mile distribution companies, which is their ability to leverage a range of distribution channels and also to switch between them. And Ecofiltro is not the only example of a GDC member that has substantially pivoted their distribution model in response to changing market conditions or a more diverse product portfolio or some kind of new opportunity. We see that distributors use a whole range of models, distribution models, to effectively serve their consumers. And some work through cooperatives and savings groups. Some work through institutions like schools and health clinics. But the two most common models are door-to-door sales through agents and retail sales. We have about 140 members of the GDC right now, and around 30% of those sell exclusively through a sales agent model. About 10% sell exclusively through retail outlets, which are either existing retail outlets or their own proprietary shops or kiosks. And about 50% use a blend of these two models. There are various reasons why a distributor might choose a door-to-door or retail model, and why they might switch between them. A door-to-door model is a lot more resource intensive for a distributor to build out and manage, but it also has some pretty big advantages because it enables direct consumer contact, which facilitates strong relationships and a real feedback loop with consumers. And this is particularly important for those products that have a more complicated value proposition or require behavior change to ensure adoption. And it also tends to be important for those more expensive products, because if you have trusted relationships with your consumers, then there's less risk with providing consumer financing. But on the other hand, if your customers are already familiar with your product and they trust the brand and there's demand for that product, then a retail model can be more appropriate. And that's exactly why Ecofiltro pivoted their model. As brand recognition for Ecofiltro grew and door-to-door awareness raising and trust building became no longer necessary. I think also the other really interesting takeaway from Ecofiltro's story is the question of what happens when a product becomes better known and understood by last mile consumers, and then it moves from being a push to a pull product. Because while on the face of it, this can seem like a good thing, it can actually present some pretty big challenges for distributors. And we've seen in the off-grid sector, for example, that as consumer awareness of solar products increases, distributors face a lot more competition, and particularly, unfortunately, from a flood of cheap, low-quality products. And that's exactly what happened to one of our members, SolarAid, in Tanzania a few years ago. SolarAid played a really big role in raising awareness of solar products across the country, largely through school campaigns, and selling nearly a million solar lights in the process. But as awareness and demand grew, so did the number of competitors and the number of cheap fake products. So SolarAid ended up having to wind down their operations in 2016. So from one angle, a real success story. SolarAid contributed significantly to catalyzing an entire market, but it also affected their competitiveness and ultimately ruined their Tanzanian operations. So hopefully the case of Ecofiltro has given you some helpful insights into how distributors experiment with distribution channels and make decisions about distribution channels. And please feel free to reach out to the GDC team to learn more.
Brilliant. I mean, that's so insightful, that natural evolution almost from push to pull product, as you know, through the door-to-door model, you educate consumers, you get that wide uptake, and then it evolves into this retail sales channel. But then with it comes increased competition and low-cost products. Brilliant. That's really helpful. Excellent summary. Thank you, Emma. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Tune in next week for the second in our three-part series on last-mile distributors. And the second one is showcasing the value of mergers, and probably quite instructive when, you know, a market gets saturated, like we've just heard. So that's it. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great week.
FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.